Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
You know, maybe I'm just getting older, but I hate cliches, Pollyanna cliches like 70 is the new 50. BS. Maybe 55 is the new 50. But you're going to get some straight talk about work over 50. Whether you're deciding whether to stay the course, change directions, land a job because you're unemployed and scared that your wrinkles are going to be a huge liability, whether you're going to go for a last hurrah or just try to hang on or retire, and whether to do it cold turkey or use a glide path. And then what? Well, we all know people who look and act younger than their chronicle age, who are at least 55 as the new 50. I really do have clients who are 50, 60, even 70, maybe even a little more than 70, now that I think about it, who are as productive or more productive even than certainly a lot of younger people that I know. In addition to functioning better, and the truth is, they also tend to look younger. Cell robustness, if that's a word, doesn't stop at the dermis. And of course, now the people like that are going to experience some age discrimination. It's just the way we are, where we look at society, and we tend to think that old means washed up. But you really can counter that one strike against you, that two strike against you, by trying to sell your age as a plus, because it usually often is a plus, especially, for example, the knowledge and wisdom that you've accrued over decades. If you have, not everybody has. Some people have been the same mediocre worker for 25, 30 years. Alas, our genes and our lifestyle don't always smile as beneficently on all of us. And all of us, I am speaking about myself, I am over 50. So the first step in deciding how to handle aging and your career is an honest self-assessment. It's going to help you decide how ambitious to be in the job responsibilities you seek, the compensation you seek. If you answer those questions honestly, it should tease out your reality. So I'm going to ask a few questions, see if you can be honest with yourself enough about them. Compared with your colleagues who are ages, say, 30 to 50, how would you compare on each of these? Number one, how quickly you learn new things. Your ability to hold multiple thoughts in mind so you can solve complex problems. That's what complex problem solving requires, the ability to keep two or three thoughts in your mind and kind of put them together, analyze them, synthesize them in different ways. Compared with your colleagues ages 30 to 50, how would you compare your short-term memory? Is it pretty much as good as ever, or like some people I know, it's CRS, can't remember stuff? Compared with colleagues ages 30 to 50, how would you compare your ability to put in a fully productive workday? Okay, now let's look at some not physiological factors. Compared with your colleagues 30 to 50, are you reasonably up to speed on the technical material needed for your work? Software, scientific knowledge, etc. Normally, people, when they are over 50, they don't need to be at the cutting edge. Generally, the people who are kind of up-to-the-minute nerds tend to be the individual contributor worker bees. And so, you know, while there are exceptions, the goal when you're over 50 is to be reasonably competent so they don't think of you as a dinosaur. Troglodyte is the word I like to use. Another non-physiological factor, compared with colleagues 30 to 50, how willing and able are you to fit into a younger workplace culture? I'm not saying you're going to be necessarily working at a place where everybody's throwing frisbees, playing foosball, and talking about the latest pop culture icon, but can you fit into a place where the average worker is 30 or 40 or 25? And finally, compared with your colleagues ages 30 to 50, how would you compare in terms of this? How accepting you'd be to having a younger boss? Now, I'm not going to ask you to score this, count the number, or whatever that, because, you know, that's false precision. These things are just obviously very subjective. They're some, you know, qualitative self-assessments. So simply, overall, as you sit on this Sunday morning, thinking about all this, how would you kind of rate yourself overall across all those questions? Should your work goal be to be more ambitious than you have in the past? Some people really are at their best in their 50s and 60s. If so, how should you be more ambitious? Rise to be an executive? Try to invent something? Be self-employed? Have more guts to question authority at work? Or should your work remain at your current level of ambition, but maybe ambitious differently? Like maybe you want to, as many people when they get older, they become more managerial, less technical. Or should you move to a new sector? So many people here in the Bay Area really have hate corporations, and so maybe you felt like you needed to work for corporate America to make more, you thought you'd make more money. Well, recent studies show that actually for the same work, now government employees get paid more than private sector. Should you be switching from the public, the profit sector, for-profit sector, to government? Or maybe you've been in government and you just, you know, you're tired of, and forgive the stereotype, but it's sometimes true, the endlessly labyrinthine, molasses-like pace at which change occurs in government, and the sometimes wastefulness of government. Or should you work for a nonprofit? Not everybody's starving in the nonprofit sector. Some people get paid very well, especially if they're bringing in the bucks in the development department, fundraising. Or should you be less ambitious? How so? Should you scale back from a really demanding job to a less demanding one, or go part-time? Or should you retire? We all reach a point when we'd be wise to pass the mantle to the next generation, which would then give us more time for other activities. And that, I think, may set the stage for introducing my co-conspirator today on Work with Marty Nemco. She, too, is 50-plus, but that is far from her only claim to fame. She is the Napa County Superintendent of Schools. She's won a zillion awards. And most importantly, she's put up with me for a long time, Dr. Barbara Nemco. What are your thoughts about any of what I just said?
Well, my thought is really clear. It's a very individual thing. And the way I think of it is, it's not so much a question of retiring from, it's a question of what are you going to retire to. And if you can't figure out how you're going to spend your time after you retire, it's probably not time yet.
Yeah. So I always like to deal with the specific, and we will go to, dear listeners, we will be going to the phones, and I'm really eager, I'm sure Barbara is too, to hear your questions about your own work life, 50-plus, but we want to set the stage by providing a little content. So it's immediately interesting you jumped right to the retirement thing. People 50-plus, you know, neither one of us are anywhere thinking about retirement, but you jumped right to the retirement thing. Let's say, thought experiment, that Barbara Nemco had to release a new edict from the Empress of the Universe that said that Barbara Nemco needed to retire. Does she know what she would do to fill her time?
No. That's why I'm not retiring. I don't have hobbies. I'm not going to play golf, and I'm not going to play cards. I'm not a big exerciser, so I'm not going to spend my time getting incredibly healthy by doing yoga and Pilates and bike riding and playing tennis. And I love, love, love what I do. So it would be quite a challenge for me. Now, if I had to, and I think the other reason that I'm so anti-retirement, I watched my mother retire at 65 because it was the edict. Mm-hmm. It was not her choice. That was the rule. When you hit 65, you were out. And she didn't know what to do with herself and was not happy in retirement, much happier in the years that she was working.
And she was just an admin.
So I don't have the role model for retirement. Same with my father. He retired and looked out the window for a couple of years.
I'm actually shocked, Barbara.
He found another job.
I'm shocked. Really? You know, you do have a hobby, a very serious hobby. You're an actress. You've been in a million plays. You love it. It makes you glow almost as much as making dinner. So I could see you being in lots of plays, directing plays, coaching high school kids as being an assistant director. You love the grandkids more than life itself, more than Martin Nemco himself. You'd be on a plane to Washington, D.C. all the time. You have orgasms over travel. You'd be traveling up the wazoo. I don't see you being... Why would you say you wouldn't know what to do? Oh, yeah, and you'd be a consultant. Look, you've won a million awards as superintendent of schools. You'd be on those teams that the headhunters bring in from the outside to choose a new superintendent. You'd be a consultant. You're one of the nation's leading experts on educational technology and on vocational education. I was shocked that you said you wouldn't know what you would do. Tell me, am I just reminding you of these things, or am I missing something?
Well, I don't know. I like being in plays, but that's an extra thing to do. I've managed to squeeze that in all these years on top of a job, so no, that's not what I want to do full time. And I think the grandchildren are fabulous, but I also believe that visitors should stay only as long as fish, and that's about 3 days. What I never want is for them to say, oh, are you coming again? What I love is that now I don't have lots of time, so it's, oh, when are you coming again? So that's another reason that I don't think I want to have too much time on my hands. I probably would be offered some opportunities, but, you know, we're talking about retirement in general, not retirement in me. Not everybody has those options, and again, I don't know what I'd be offered and whether it would be interesting. You know, right now, I'm doing something that I love. Okay. If you're doing something that you love, why would you necessarily decide because of some arbitrary reason like age that you're going to give it up when you're having fun?
I want to move away from both. I like to talk about you and me initially because it's so concrete and we can be more nuanced and detailed about it. But I want to get away from us, and I also want to get away from retirement, because just because you're 50 plus, so you're making the implication that you're one step into the hereafter. So I want to talk.
Well, that's your definition of retirement. That's not mine.
Well, anyway, you were saying that it was a moment ago, but let's talk about. Let's assume you want to stay in the game. So it's critical, and I can't stress this enough, dear listeners. Do not be defensive about your age, to the extent it's true, of course, but sell it as a strength. I mentioned briefly earlier, but really, if you've been at the game for 20, 30, 40 years, you have acquired a knowledge base. You have had a million experiences. You do have perspective that could help younger people often avoid the mistakes that they had to learn on their skin. Sell that, whether you are looking for a job or you're currently in your employment. Make that part of your, as they say, your brand. Right? And also, it is, for both perception and substance, as I, again, very briefly alluded to in the introduction, you've got to keep current with at least the need-to-know knowledge, or if not the good-to-know knowledge in your field. So, again, I like asking questions to you, my dear listeners. Should you be reading more articles? They're the most time-effective way to get up to speed on something. Should you be attending more webinars? Should you be attending? I love webinars because, again, you don't have to leave your desk. You don't have to sit in traffic or mass transit. Should you go to conferences? Should you hire a tutor? A very potent way, maybe on software or technology. Should you take a course? Maybe even a whole certificate's worth, online or in person. There's so much available on Coursera.com, I think it is, or Udemy, or Udacity, or edX. It's amazing how many courses are available next to free or free. And for an extra $50, I think most of them give you a certificate. And that's available anytime. You just have to be self-motivated. But if you can't, some people need to have the in-person experience of a course. There's tons of those. How many meetups? I sign up for meetups. I get emails all the time on meetups I care about. I love house concerts. So I get meetups about those. But there are meetups to discuss technology and everything else. That's a great thing that older people should do to stay in the game. What's your reaction to any of that?
I totally agree. It is very important to stay in and try to keep as current as you can. And sometimes that does mean learning a lot of new things, and that's good. But I think as somebody with experience, you have so much to offer that younger people do not have in terms of you've been through everything. Most of the things that come up in the workplace are not brand new. They may have different names, but you've been through it before and probably have seen ways to fix some of these problems, because most of the problems involve people, and people are pretty consistent in the kinds of issues they get into in the workplace, whether it's a problem with a coworker or not keeping up and having to improve. So I think you have a lot to offer in the human relations arena, and that is a reason that people want you to stay on. You're probably calmer. You're responsible. Older people show up for work all the time. They're not going to rock concerts.
And they don't have three kids that you, who are young with, you know, preteens or toddlers.
Absolutely, good point. Or little ones who are getting sick all the time and they have to be out to take care of them. So you really bring tremendous skills to the workplace. Don't sell yourself short.
Let's concretize that. So let's say, Bob, you know, you have the gift of knowing I'm too pushy, so I'd probably get fired from any workplace no matter what my age in the work. But, you know, that's why I'm self-employed. But you fit in. So let's say, for whatever reason, you got fired as the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, and now you get hired. Maybe you're interviewing for a job in which you want to try to sell your age. And as well, when you're on the job during the on-ranking period, you want to brand yourself so that you are respected for that. Do you have any idea how you would word it in a job interview? What would you say? Or on the job, what you'd say to try to brand yourself that way as the wise old gray hair? Although you color your hair.
Excuse me, I'll never have gray hair.
I know, exactly.
It's ridiculous.
Exactly.
And that's important, too. I think you want to avoid looking old.
We'll get to the looks piece. I know you like that part, but we'll get to that in a moment. Let's stay with the subject.
So what would I say? I would say over my decades of work, I have worked with all kinds of people. I think I've pretty much managed to get along with all of them, even when sometimes we didn't start out well for some predisposition or some issue that they may have thought they had with me, I think I've been able to win them over. And I would be happy to share some of that and to help with some of the personnel issues that might come up just on the basis of my experience. And I'm not going to do this without your authorization and might not even do it directly with the people, but I would be happy to talk to you, Mr. Personnel Manager, about some of the ways I've dealt with problems over my time in the workplace.
And I'd give you a C for that, because unless you've backed it up with an example of a problem, you know, if you ticked off three or four, I'm deliberately not going to out, you know, you've done a lot of, you deal with the most sensitive possible issues in your work. I'll just say, you know, with a teacher
Absolutely.
Who was taught to be, who was accused of being a child molester, to children doing things that were, let's just say, inappropriate, to threatens.
Well, let's not be specific with what I do. Let's just say that when you've worked a long time,
but
come up with every different scenario possible.
But that my point is to my dear listeners, if they're getting interviewed for a job, it is empty to say how good they are at dealing with personnel problems. They need to give example after example after example, and so that it becomes clear through, you know, that's why every journalist starts an article with Mary Johnson had this problem, blah, 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 blah. You've got to have specific examples, otherwise you sound like you're BSing. I mean, I could say I'm the greatest fine artist in the world, but unless I show you my portfolio, you know, you could think I'm full of it. Make sense?
It makes sense, and in this situation, I'm not going to give you specific examples because I'm currently working.
I understand. Okay, let's turn to your favorite topic, dear Barbara Nemco. Let's let our listeners know. Listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, we are talking about career decisions after age 50. Whether you should stay the course, if so, how do you make sure that you stay the course? Should you be rising to more ascendancy? Should you go for a last hurrah? Should you just try to hang on? Should you retire? Whatever. And we're talking about, and we're going to go to the phones in just a couple of minutes, but we're talking about the part in which we are talking about if you want to use your age as a strength and certainly not as a weakness. So we talked about the various ways you can sell it. your age as a strength. But now let's talk about, Barbara, by your own admission, your favorite topic, the looks thing. The species Homo sapien is lookist. It's a lookist species. So especially if you're 50-plus, it helps to look vital, not like Deadwood. And yeah, that means dressing well, but not too well. I see old people, you know, they come in a jacket and tie when everybody else is wearing a, you know, an open shirt with jeans, and they just, it's like a neon sign says, I'm old. And also dressing in a style that's timeless, or at least reasonably current. We don't want you to be like a teeny bopper, but something that looks at least reasonably current, unlike me. I'm a hypocrite here because I dress like a pig. But anyway, looking young also means the way you walk, striding rather than trudging. It means posture. I think it was Helen Gurley Brown who said after 40, it all comes down to posture.
That is correct.
Old people hunch.
She was right.
Old people hunch. Young people, they stand straight with their shoulders back. When you're speaking, especially if you're nervous, we tend to breathe shallowly, which makes your voice sound weak. Breathe. And it can't hurt to use, this is something I learned from President Obama. He uses something called the Obama chin. I don't think he labeled it that. But especially when he was saying something controversial, he raised his chin slightly. That gave the appearance of strength and confidence. That's an easy thing to do and important if you're 50 plus. Okay, so it's your favorite topic. I just wanted to do a brain dump of what my thoughts are about how to look the part, look not too old, not like Deadwood. What are Barbara Nemco's thoughts about how to look okay when you're over 50 in the workplace?
Well, I think you don't have to, and you shouldn't try to dress like young people dress, because you're going to look silly. And again, then you look like you're trying too hard to hide your age. So, yes, you don't want to overdress in a very casual workplace, but there are degrees of casual, and I would strongly suggest that you don't try to come in like some of the young people today who look like they rolled out of bed and forgot to wash their clothes before they came. When I walk down the hall, one of the things I always think about is, am I standing up straight? And am I lifting my head high? Because, yes, if you walk down the hall and you're slouched over, you do look old. And it's unconscious. I remember your sister telling me years ago, you're not standing up straight. Stand up straight. And she was absolutely right. But I wasn't conscious of it, because when you're young, you don't have to think about it. So that's something that's got to be on your mind all the time. You want to look as good as you can possibly look. And so for me, that certainly means I'm never going to have gray hair, because I don't need to. And I'm going to, I do try to walk briskly, and I try to do enough exercise that I'm well oxygenated. I got a stand-up computer at my desk now.
Let me ask you a question about the coloring your hair. You've mentioned it now twice. There
well,
are many people who feel it's... What'd you say?
You mentioned it first.
No, but
once you outed me, it was okay.
Yeah,
for
okay.
Me to say it.
But you know, many people feel that it is inauthentic. It is succumbing to ageism. You know, of course, they consider cosmetic surgery both a waste of the precious medical resources, as well as prostituting yourself to vanity, risking surgery and the cost. What are your thoughts about the wisdom of capitulating to our lookist society, our ageist society, coloring your hair, let alone, say, for example, doing cosmetic surgery?
You know, I believe that everybody has a certain way that they look that makes them feel good. There are days that I don't like the way I look, and other people will tell me, oh, you look great. I don't feel it. So I want to feel that I look good. And I will do whatever that takes within my budget that I can do. And so, yes, that certainly includes coloring my hair and getting it cut frequently so that it looks right, and dressing so that I am wearing something that I like to wear and makes me feel comfortable, because that makes me feel more confident. And when you feel more confident, you project that kind of air of confidence, and people form an impression. And the impression is that this is somebody who knows what he or she is doing.
Here,
so
I,
whatever it takes the individual person.
Here I agree 10,000%. We don't look twice at somebody who spends thousands and thousands of dollars on psychotherapy to give them more confidence. And yet some people, many people, will admit to feeling more confident if they are looking, if they feel good about the way they look. And if you, it is very hard to give to the world your best if the world is writing you off. And so if you can look more credible, younger, dressing in a style that's viewed as credible, that's going to enable you to give your gifts to the world. It's also going to enable you to keep your job. So I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with trying to spending time and money on looking, on fitting in. You don't want to be judged on your sizzle. You want to be judged on your steak. You know, I think we should go to the phones. This is as good a time as any. Dear listener, especially right now, I'm particularly speaking to you if you're over 50. I'm inviting you specifically to call, whether you are unemployed. We haven't talked about how to land a job if you're over 50. I'll be happy to address that, but I'd rather address that in the specific context of your situation. Or you are employed and either saying, you know what, I'm at my best now, and I don't want to be just hanging it up. I want this to be my best decade yet, my best project yet, or whatever. But you're not quite sure how to make it happen. That's great. Or if you're just trying to hang on, or you're deciding whether to retire, or you've already retired, and it isn't going so peachy keen. All of those are good reasons to call. So the phone number here will work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. We will both try to be of help with your problem. The phone number here at KALW and work with Marty and Barbara, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Before I even get out that phone number, the calls are coming in. So let's go right to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can we help?
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. First of all, I want to say I love it when both you and your wife are on the air.
Everybody says that. She adds so much. Yep.
Okay. So here's the deal. I am retired. I took your advice many, many years ago during the recession of 2008 and went into the medical technology field. And it allowed me to accrue enough Social Security that I can cruise now that I'm retired, which is fine. But I'm on a very tight budget, and that gets to the crux of my question.
Okay.
I now want to go into a second career of art therapy and early childhood education, and I would like to work in the institutions which serve the needy community, the underserved community. And I know there are wonderful programs for people who have the wherewithal to take care of their kids and properly. And San Mateo County, where I live, also has wonderful programs for underserved kids. But I know that there's still a lot of room for children who could use somebody who's sincerely dedicated in their interests.
Barbara, you made a grunting noise of agreement. So why don't you take that? What are your thoughts?
Could I ask a question first?
Oh, sure. I thought you
okay.
Would.
Okay. Here's what I want to know. As I said, I'm on a very tight budget.
Right.
And I have no credentials in the field, and you know there are people with master's degrees and doctorates.
Art therapy degrees, right?
Right. So since you're the experts, I was wondering, what would be the best strategy to go about educating myself since I'm on a budget? I can't afford to take enrichment classes at Stanford.
Yeah, I got it. So, Barbara, let me ask you the question directly. Without a credential, there are funded programs. You know schools well, school districts, county office of education, the whole educational infrastructure. For at-risk, do you have any suggestions for him as to whether he could get, you know, as an aide, where he's making $18, $20 an hour, or is that dreaming, at least in the education world?
Well, you know, the problem is that there are so many people who retire today who have a lot of money and want to give back that they're volunteering in doing these kinds of things. We have a lot of retired volunteers, and it's funny because I don't think of them as retired because they seem too young to me to be retired, but they are. And they come in, and we have somebody who does poetry with kids and somebody who does arts with kids. So the idea of doing it as a way of making money is a little bit more challenging, although I would think that you could become an aide in the school
right.
district.
That's what I'm talking
because
about.
Because that doesn't take a terribly high level of skill. And then as part of your job,
right.
you
right.
could introduce the idea that you'd like to do some art therapy with kids, assuming that you have learned enough about it that you have something to offer.
That's what make. What do you? That's exactly where I was going. And caller, what do you think?
Well, I think that's a great practical suggestion, and we'll certainly look into that. I know that from my past experience, if you're a good employee, you will advance if you really want to.
And you know, if you're retired, you said you've been retired a long time. To hell with advancement for the moment. There's very little that's as rewarding as working one-on-one or with small groups. So there are all these after-school programs. I mean, I would go to the money. You know, San Mateo County is a very wealthy county because the tax rates are extremely high for the people who make money. And so they have all the money in the world. And they have program after program after program. Also, I would go to East Palo Alto because the poorer the school district, the more they get little money from tax dollars, but they get a huge amount from federal grants, from which are also tax dollars, but it's different, and also from foundation grants. You know, you talked three times about the underserved communities. I would be going to the East. I would be visiting the website of the East. It's called Ravenswood Union School District. That's the East Palo Alto. And I would go and look there and see what programs they have, and I would talk to the head of their programs for after school, et cetera. Not so much, you know, the regular teacher aid programs. Those are kind of locked-in positions. But the soft money positions that are grant-funded, they come and they go. So I would be looking, I mean, I think that's where I would go first. Or Redwood City has also a subset of low-income schools. I'd be going to the websites of the low-income schools and seeing what after-school programs specifically they might have. And again, I agree with Barbara 10,000%. It doesn't have to be specifically about art therapy. We can incorporate art in the psychology, the psychological value of art, that is, in drawing pictures of their family and explaining it to you, etc. I would be going to those pockets of money that are low income, or again, San Mateo County, every corporation has a foundation, and you can be sure that those big corporations, you know, from Amazon to HP to even IBM, which is a big operation here, has a foundation, and they tend to fund local projects. See what kind of local projects. And finally, there's something called the Community Foundation. San Mateo County has something called the San Mateo County Community Foundation, which is an umbrella organization that collects money and distributes it, and it guides up on distribution to all the nonprofits in the area. And so Boys and Girls Clubs and millions of others, they all get money. And some of them have the money and they don't know what to do with it. And paying you $20 an hour would be nothing to them. So that's my brain dump of all the ideas. What's your reaction, honestly?
I think that's wonderful. I've got them all written down, except the first one is Ravenswood.
Ravenswood Union School District, I believe. But just Google Ravenswood Schools or East Palo Alto School District.
Ravenswood.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, and that should, you should end up with something. And I wish you the best.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco, Barbara Nemco. How can we help you? Hi.
Oh, hi. It's Dr. Reese.
Hello, Dr. Reese, whoever you are.
Yeah, no, so I'm based in San Francisco, and it's just funny that this is your topic today because there's actually a film that's going to be part of the San Francisco Documentary Film Festival this Wednesday that addresses this whole concept of when is plastic surgery appropriate, how important it is to be conservative, and how, if one gets it or not, there shouldn't be any shame either way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called Take My Nose, Please, and it's going to be at the Vogue Theater in San Francisco.
That's a great
Wednesday
title.
Night.
Take My Nose, Please. I just love it. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, it's the filmmaker's angle. Joan Crone is a beauty writer out of New York, and her angle, she realized that normal celebrities wouldn't talk to her about plastic surgery, but comedians would. And so she follows two comedians who are exploring, and part of it is, what if they got so much plastic surgery, they look so good that maybe they wouldn't appear funny anymore.
Oh, that's
funny. So
that
would directly impact their careers.
That's funny.
There's a problem I hadn't thought about.
It's funny, but when you mention that, you know, I think about the counter to that, Barbara Streisand, who's got the iconic nose, and she refused. And it certainly didn't hurt her at all. She used it, you know, it's like she smiled and wore it proudly. That's the other thing I like to think about. Sometimes, if somebody is really extremely, let's just say, conventionally unattractive, if they wear it proudly and they even make self-effacing jokes about it, it can be a sign, it can garner respect. So we don't need to go either side of this, whether you should have it or not. Sometimes you can actually become, you can be endearing about it. I'm bald, and so I make fun of it. You know, I tried to not make people, when I was younger and I was prematurely bald, I tried to make people not feel uncomfortable about it and made fun about my hair, my haircuts or whatever. So anyway, thank you very much for the call. Let's go back to the phones. Barbara, go ahead.
Just point out that if you're Barbara Streisand with her kind of talent,
good point,
you can overcome
good point
not having the best nose in the universe. But for most of us
right
who are not Barbara Streisand, looks are important.
You are damn right. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. How can we help you? Hi, it's you. Are you
Hello
there? Hi.
Is it me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Marty, thank you for having this topic. I have a very timely situation going on here that I would like to quickly share with you.
Great.
I retired 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I retired early.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a plan for my retirement. So I followed my dream.
Mm-hmm.
I've been retired and doing everything, traveling all over the world, mm-hmm, doing all these things. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've retired overseas. I've come back to the United States. And I know that the field I left with, I was happy when I left because I wanted to retire, but I miss the field I was in. And I have a chance to go back into it again.
Mm.
And I know that, I mean, that's, some people retire and that's it. And then, you know, I wasn't going to stay overseas and spend all my retirement.
Mm-hmm.
It was time for me to do something. I volunteered overseas,
mm-hmm,
but I didn't feel coming back to the United States and volunteering right away was going to work for me. So I have a chance to get back into my field. And yes, with all the knowledge that I have for the many years I was in, the field I was in, it was the beauty business. So you have to be, as Barbara would say, you have to be on top of your game when you get back into a field, because everybody's going to check me out right away again. Hey, you look good, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, everything is age appropriate,
mm-hmm,
dressing age appropriate, have the right makeup appropriate. You know, you don't want to look like a teeny bopper, but you know, that's my business, is to look good.
So do you have a question? I mean, are you a question?
No, I was just, you know, you were saying what to do when you retired. Well, I retired, followed my dream, and now I just want to get back in my field again.
Right.
A lot of people don't do that.
Are you a hair cutter or more of a cosmetics person?
I'm in the beauty, like perfumes and, you know, I was teaching skincare and beauty, just everything, doing big conferences. I've done it all. Running retail stores, everything you can think of, I've done it.
Okay.
So I have a lot of experience. And I like what you said. You don't want to overstate what you do know if people don't know you, because they'll think you're full of baloney.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to back up some of your claims. I think I forget the word.
Perfect. All right, Barbara, another thing. This is a job for Barbara. This is more, you know, another way to seem old. You know, in that when people were, you know, people who are in their 60s or 70s now, it was more the norm when they were in their 20s to wear fairly heavy colognes and perfumes. But both because of chemical sensitivities as well as it's just not current, there is a good example of where less is more, that you can, yes, you can look attractive and either not wear perfume because it really is kind of out in the Bay Area, or if you're going to do it, less is more. Do you agree or disagree?
I will have to rethink how much perfume I've already put on today.
Let's go. All our lines are lighted up without
you. I do want to address something that your caller said.
Great.
And that is, I can't tell you how many people I know who, as the joke goes, flunked retirement.
Mm.
A lot of people decide to retire, and we haven't talked at all about the financial viability
exactly
of retiring.
Exactly.
Truthfully, if you were to Google when to retire, you're going to come up with 72 websites all about finance.
Right.
That's got to be the number one, what you need to have and what are the options in terms of maximizing what retirement you're going to get from Social Security, or if you're lucky enough to have a pension, or how if you work longer, you know, today a lot of people are staying longer. And if you work until 70, that's going to maximize your Social Security. So why leave at 62 when you will get a raise every year that you stay? And your health insurance may be covered longer. So there are a lot of good reasons to stay. But now I want to deal with coming back.
Before we do that, I want to comment on the financial, because it's a great point. First of all, the issue of when to start taking Social Security is one really, and it requires that we started the show with an honest self-assessment, depending upon your longevity. If you are, sure you're going to get more money when you're 70, but if you think your life expectancy is 74, you reach a certain level where you can, I think at 66 there is a bump as well. Mm-hmm. But you want to make an individual assessment on how much you need the money, how likely you are to live. It's not one size fits all. You shouldn't just wait till you're 70. But I want to talk a little bit about, before we go on to the next topic you wanted to talk about, which is great, but there are many people who think they can't afford to retire because they make assumptions about the status quo expenditures. And there are two huge expenditures that most people that should take a hard look at, and if they really would like to retire, could save money. Housing is, of course, number one. And there is a bias toward, quote, safe neighborhoods. But as somebody who's statistically oriented, the actual odds of you getting attacked or robbed I'm not saying, move to a war zone, but if you move to a, quote, less safe neighborhood, your odds of getting assaulted are trivial, and the odds of the additional risk of you getting assaulted are trivial if you exercise normal cautions, and your cost saving is mammoth with 100% certitude. So think about potentially moving to a, quote, less safe neighborhood and or getting a roommate, which can be also very enriching. Let's say you've been somebody who's, I think of widows, and unfortunately there are 4.4 widows for every widower. As a man, I lament that, but that's a whole other story with the way our healthcare spending does. Anyway, that's a whole other story. But sometimes, especially for widows, widowers, their world tends to get smaller and smaller. So if they go and get a roommate, you're making money off of that, and you could, if you're very careful about who you choose as your roommate, it could open your vistas to something completely different. And the second thing is higher ed. And this I can speak with real knowledge. My PhD is in the evaluation of education from Berkeley, and I have written a number of books on it. And I say that not to brag, but to establish just a bit of credibility. The best way that people can save money is by not feeling that if you're sending your kid to a community college, at least for the first 2 years, that you're abdicating your responsibility as a good parent. So many parents think, oh, my kid worked so hard in high school, how could I tell him to go to community college? And they go into this enormous debt for something that is actually a worse education. I've said it before on the radio, so I'm not going to go into details, but I beg you to at least consider, because every kid is different, but to consider whether it is really worth sacrificing your financial security and whether staying on at a job when you really would rather retire by sending your kid to a UC, let alone to one of those private colleges. Yes, Stanford and Harvard, they are, the brand name is so valuable, and being with those students is so valuable. But the millions of parents, it kills me, who spend on USC or the University of San Diego or Syracuse or Tulane or Northwestern or and go into it costs $300,000 for 4 years. So if you're thinking about retiring, maybe you can if you think hard and afresh about housing and about your children's education. Anything you want to say about that before we move to the next topic?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I will agree with you about saving a fortune and having your child go at least 2 years to a community colleges. I think community colleges are absolutely the unsung heroes of the education system for all the reasons you've said a billion times on the show.
Right.
I will not agree with you about moving to a less safe neighborhood. I think that could be very depressing. You've always lived in this nice neighborhood, and now suddenly you're going to live in a neighborhood that you may know that statistically you're going to be safe, but your friends may not want to come to visit you there. I would say it's probably a fine time to, quote, downsize. And in downsizing, if you get a smaller house, you're going to save a lot of money by selling the house that you already have, assuming you're fortunate enough to have lived in the house all these years. And that's a really good way to save money, but I'm not suggesting anybody move to a less safe neighborhood.
We need to agree.
I would not want to do that myself.
I know you wouldn't, but I think we need to agree to disagree. Just because it's somewhat uncomfortable.
We've done that often enough over the years.
The financial benefits are so enormous and enable you to retire that EU factor about not living in a great neighborhood could be more easily overcome than the pain of staying in a job where you really feel you should be retiring.
Well, and that's what makes this so difficult to talk about, because it's so individual. It depends on your job. It depends how much they're paying you. It depends how much you love going to work or hate going to work.
Yep.
It depends how up you are on your game or how you feel like you've lost your game. So all of it is totally dependent on your individual circumstances, but you do need to take into account, most importantly, am I financially able to retire? That's got to be the starting place.
Okay. So on that point about individual difference, let's go to the phones and see if we can help an individual with their particular problem.
Good idea.
Yes. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can we help? Hi. It's you.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Are you there? Can you hear?
Yes.
Okay, good. Talk to me. What's on your mind?
Hey, my name is Rowan.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you beautifully. Keep talking.
My name is Rowan.
Yes.
And I just wanted to make a comment.
Okay.
On this whole thing about, you know, confidence and what can we do to look better out there when we are trying to you know, get back into this world. I'm not quite 50, but I am married, and I just want to make a comment. It is harder for women to do this and struggle with this on a daily basis because of the way society basically pushes all these different ways that women have to look in order to achieve success in society, whether it's a job or anything like that. So I'm glad that this conversation is taking place, but also just wanted to highlight that for men, it's not that hard. Men, the stigma of men aging a lot better than women over years, kind of takes a toll on that. And so women, they're in turn, I think, get the shorter end of the stick in that sense. So they have to do a lot more work. They have to keep a tab on a lot more things in order to make sure that they achieve that place in society, whatever that might be, how they need to create that perception in order to get places. And I just wanted to make that comment. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Barbara, do you believe, you know, obviously men live 5.2 years shorter than women, and they do, in objectively, they live their last decade in worse health. But not everything is objective. Barbara Nemco, you know, again, given your decades of experience and as a woman, do you sense that the pressure to look a certain way is gender specific? Do you think women have, as the caller suggested, an additional burden, less of a burden? What is your honest appraisal?
My personal feeling is that women have it better because there are so many different things that we can do that are perfectly acceptable. If a woman colors her hair, that's natural. We don't even try to hide it anymore. You know, kind of laugh about it. I'm never going to be gray. But a man who colors his hair, people may look at a little bit funny. We have all kinds of wonderful cosmetics that we can use, and a man can't do that. He's kind of stuck with what he's got. A man who's losing his hair, that's kind of the head that faces the world, whereas a woman who may be losing her hair, if she gets a wig or she gets some kind of an extension, nobody's going to think twice about that. That's fine. That people are going to say, hey, you look great. So in my view, and, you know, that's one woman's view, I am so grateful to be female and have the benefit of all of this. Also, if a woman has a facelift, nobody's going to think twice about that. A man has a facelift, people are going to go, isn't he vain? Or I just think there's a kind of different standard. Okay. So I feel fortunate to
you know,
be female.
I want to make sure that, fair enough. I want to make sure that we're not too upper class about this. So I am well aware that there are many people who are over 50 who are looking for work, who are unemployed, and are terrified that their wrinkles and or gray hair, if they don't color it, are going to impede. So I need to do a one-minute or two-minute riff on at least a couple of ideas that I think are relevant to landing a job when you're over 50. I think a case can be made that it is wiser on average to hire an older person. As we've been saying a couple of times, but I want to reiterate it now because it's in this context, older people are more likely to have seen what works and what doesn't in a given situation. And they're more likely to have that perspective that comes sometimes with age, and inexperienced people will often overreact. Also, job seekers have an advantage in being older because you've had longer to build a network. So even if it's not great, if you feel like you're many people who doesn't have a big one, it's certainly bigger than if when you were 25. That could provide warm lead advisors, customers, people willing to give you a lead on a job. And when you're interviewing, saying, "Hey, because I'm older, I know a lot of people, and who could be customers, or I have a peer group of advisors, or I have people who could be a source of collaboration across organizations," selling it. And as you implied earlier, older workers are less likely to be absent because they don't have young children screaming. They're less likely to be strung out from getting high at that rock concert. They're less likely to job hop.
Yep.
But that said,
and more grateful for having the job.
I also don't need to, sometimes older people give a sense of entitlement. Not just millennials do, but older people say, "Well, I'm older, I've worked, you know, so much, etc." But, you know, you have to recognize that most employers are biased against wrinkles and gray hair, not because of the wrinkles or the gray hair. They are biased against the frequent, not always, concomitance of those wrinkles and gray hair among older job seekers. Older job seekers are more likely to be burned out. They're more likely to be technologically not current. They're more likely to resist being managed by a much younger person. They're more likely to have back pain. They're more likely to have less energy and not have as good a short-term memory or even, you know, reasoning skills, because when old people get older, they do have more cardiovascular disease, which does impede memory and cognitive functioning. They are more likely to have cancer and the chemotherapy that is debilitating. They're more likely to have diabetes, which can have cognitive effects. They're more likely to have pre-Alzheimer's. And despite that, many older job seekers expect a salary that's higher than many 25-year-olds would be happier to accept. Why am I saying this? I want you to balance the advantages that you can appropriately point to without the hubris that many older job seekers have. So, yes, make your case in your job applications and your networking and the interviews that if it's true you are technologically current, that you are healthy enough to do a good job, and that you would welcome the opportunity to work for that employer, including have a younger boss. And when you're interviewed, shallow though it may be, yes, convey your energy and motivation with good posture by striding and not trudging. And as I'm trying to demonstrate here, I'm over 50, but I like to think that the energy I'm conveying does not convey that of an old, washed-up person. Now, of course, if you're older, you may need to do a little extra. You know, you may want to include a little short white paper, you know, which is like one of those papers you did in college that would convey your current knowledge of the job you're applying for. Like if you're applying for a job as a manager in a healthcare system, you can say the five new keys to effective management in healthcare systems. So there you go. And one more thing, and then I'll shut up. When you are older, it might be wise to start by considering a job. Well, I'm not going to say it that way. Please don't just answer ads, because they're going to read between the lines that you've been around for. Even if you cut off the last 15 years of experience, it comes through. Use your network as the main way to get a job. Barbara, any quick reactions to that?
Well, that's all true. Those are all good points.
Let's go to the phones. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The other hand is obviously that a lot of younger people feel entitled to start at the top. They expect to come out of college and earn $75,000.
Some do.
And the older worker knows that that's not the way it goes, and frequently is so pleased to be working that they are grateful. They're willing to come in a little earlier or stay a little later because they don't have the young kids waiting for them at home. I mean, so everything is a balance between everybody's individual situation.
You know, I'm looking at the clock, and I think that may be, you know, you asked, Barb, I always tell our listeners, honestly, you asked to be able to get off the phone 5 minutes early, and so I'm going to end it here. We could take other calls. I wanted to end with... So I'm going to say goodbye to you, Barb. I'll see you in an hour.
Thank you. See you shortly.
I love you. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. I am deliberating whether I should take another call, but I think there's something I'd like to end on a little more emotional and sanguine note. I've been writing short stories, little three-minute short stories, and I wrote one that is specifically related to people over 50. And it's designed, I want to end with a little bit more of an inspirational note. It's called My Last Concert. In the wings, Sam could hear the concertmaster tuning up the orchestra. Damn, my hand is shaking more than usual. Bad Parkinson's Day. Plus, it's my last concert. I'm glad I decided to do the Grieg Piano Concerto, but with these hands, nothing's easy. You see, Sam had been a concert pianist his whole life, starting at 11 when he finished fourth in the Midwest Regional Young Artists Competition, and through 65 concerts, including one with the San Francisco, the Kansas City Symphony. But he was thinking as he was standing in the wings, all right, that was just the Kansas City Symphony Summer Festival when lots of the A players were on vacation, but still, somehow I wish my ex-wife were here. How could she have dumped me? I still wish she were here tonight. Do I play it safe? A lot of note mistakes would make the audience think I stayed at it too long, like those star baseball players who'd rather hit 200 than retire. Or do I go for a home run, a chance for at least a small write-up in the Kansas City Star? Roseman finishes with a flourish. The conductor gave Sam a forced smile and strode on stage. This is it. Deep breaths. Deep breaths. Damn, my hands are shaking more. I'm taking too long. I got to get out there. Stand up straight. Old men hunch. Stride. Don't shuffle. But Sam could manage only to plod on stage. He hung onto the piano with one hand as he took a modest head bow. If I tried for a full bow, I could fall. And he sat down at the piano. I've had this moment so many times, but this is different. Sam used his old trick of adjusting the seat up and back down again, not because it needed adjusting, but to buy a little more time to ground himself before the moment of truth. And Sam began. And he took every not crazy risk he could, and most of the time he won. Yes, his boldness caused a few note mistakes, but only the ignorant or mean-spirited could denigrate his exciting performance. It was exciting and inspiring at any age, but for an 83-year-old with advanced Parkinson's, it gives me the chills just to write about it. And yes, Sam got not just the usual obligatory extended applause, bestowed as much to protest classical music's dying popularity as to acknowledge the performer, but fervent applause. And then, yes, a standing ovation. Not a charity ovation, a heartfelt one. And Sam, who usually was too shy to really look at the applauding audience and so stared at the back wall, soaked in the smiling standing people. And then he sighed, plodded off stage for what he thought was the last time. He shuffled into his dressing room, closed the door, dropped into a chair. I survived. I did okay. I didn't embarrass myself. But I can't go to the reception. That's like a retirement party when everyone tries to make light of it being the beginning of the end, my end. And then a knock at the door. Daddy? His daughter opened the door and too effusively gushed, "You were amazing! You were really amazing! Come on, they're all waiting for you down at the reception." Sam knew there was no way to avoid it, so he trudged downstairs, and when he arrived, the chatter there resolved into applause. He thought, "I know I have to say something, but I'll make it short. No one likes long speeches. And nothing ungracious. I should be a good boy." And he began, "When we play and no one hears it, the music is incomplete. We performers are complete only with you. I'm so grateful to you for making my music complete. No, my life complete." Everyone applauded, and although Sam knew that would have been the right time to end his speechlet, the magnetism of an audience can compel a performer to keep performing. And so he added, "Honestly, I can't stand the thought this will be my last performance." And just then, a 4-year-old toddled up to him. "You want to play in my class?" And Sam Roseman went on to play more concerts than he had in his entire life, in preschools and elementary schools, first just locally, then around the country. He never got paid. Indeed, he had to pay all his travel expenses, but he didn't begrudge it. "My daughter's okay financially, so I can't think of a better way to spend my money than to teach young kids to love classical music and that old people aren't necessarily irrelevant." And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. My thanks to my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I'll do workovers on callers and coping with the burdens of being intelligent. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.